It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Liberia declares a state of emergency as the Ebola death toll mounts. President Obama ends an African summit, calling it a continent on the rise. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf late Wednesday declared a 90-day state of emergency to combat the Ebola outbreak that has claimed more than 900 lives across West Africa, 45 in just the past 3 days ending Monday. Mrs. Sirleaf said the government and people require extraordinary measures for the very survival of the state. Earlier, she instituted 3 days of fasting and prayer and look reports.
Relying on his divine guidance for our survival as a nation, I call on all Liberians to observe 3 days of national fast and prayer, to seek God's face, to have mercy on us, and forgive our sins, and heal our land.
Liberians, she said, are to fast and pray from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. during these 3 days. The pronouncement has gotten mixed reactions in the capital, Monrovia, with some saying it shows just how desperate the situation has become, while others told VOA it's an important step to keep people calm and unified. Daily life has ground to a halt in much of Liberia. Police are protecting health workers and facilities as fear and frustration continue to breed hostility. The president has put non-essential government workers on mandatory leave, closed schools, and told citizens to avoid large public gatherings. And look, VOA News. Dakar.
In Nigeria, officials confirmed a second death from Ebola, a nurse who treated a Liberian-American who died of the disease last month in Lagos. The official Saudi news agency reports a suspected Ebola patient died in Jeddah Wednesday after 2 days in intensive care. Health ministers from the Southern African Development Community Wednesday agreed on the need for a coordinated effort to contain the spread of the illness. Aaron Motsoaledi is the South African health minister.
Here in South Africa, we've already been screening people using the thermal scanners. We've already selected hospitals here that we are busy preparing in case, there's any patient with who has got Ebola. It's not going to go to any hospital. We've already selected the hospital, we are busy preparing them. And each of the countries here is going to do so. So some of these processes have already started long ago. We just need to coordinate to make sure that it's not only one country is ready, it's all of us who are ready.
The World Health Organization, meanwhile, is to convene an ethics panel next week to discuss whether or not the experimental drug ZMapp should be used on some Ebola patients in West Africa. The drug has not yet been approved or tested on humans, and according to its manufacturer, there's only a very limited supply. At the U.S.-Africa summit in Washington Wednesday, President Obama said he lacks enough information to allow his administration to improve the early use of the drug. He said the virus is controllable with standard public health measures. A historic 3-day U.S.-Africa summit hosted by Mr. Obama in Washington ended with the president heralding the rise of the African continent and its influence in global affairs and a market of opportunity for U.S. business.
I believe a new Africa is emerging with some of the world's fastest-growing economies, a growing middle class, and the youngest and fastest-growing population on Earth. Africa will help shape the world as never before.
Final day of discussions touched on a number of major challenges, including security. Mr. Obama pledging to help Africa create a rapid response force to augment the work of UN and African Union peacekeepers.
The United States will provide additional equipment to African peacekeepers in Somalia and the Central African Republic. We will support the African Union's efforts to strengthen its peacekeeping institutions. And most importantly, we're launching a new African Peacekeeping Rapid Response Partnership with the goal of quickly deploying African peacekeepers in support of UN or AU missions. And we'll join with 6 countries that in recent years have demonstrated a track record as peacekeepers: Ghana, Senegal, Rwanda, Tanzania, Ethiopia, and Uganda.
Mr. Obama convened a session with African leaders Wednesday discussing good governance, human rights, and strengthening civil society. At the UN, senior peacekeeping operations official Edmund Mullet told the Security Council that new South Sudanese violence is dragging the country into a humanitarian disaster. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Obama announces a joint security governance initiative with six African countries.
We're launching a new security governance initiative to help our African countries continue to build strong professional security forces to provide for their own security. And we're starting with Kenya, Niger, Mali, Nigeria, Ghana, and Tunisia.
The African Union says it wants technological partnership with the United States. The UN says South Sudan faces a humanitarian catastrophe as rebels walk out of peace talks in Addis Ababa. Sierra Leone discusses a new drug to treat Ebola, and Liberia declares a state of emergency as Ebola death toll soars to new levels.
The president is responding to the grave situation we now confront. It is obviously a clear and present danger to the collective survival of our nation.
Louise Brown is Liberia's Minister of Information, and Uganda's LGBT community reacts to the annulment of the country's anti-gay law. Those stories plus Marco Man Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama says the U.S.-Africa summit has helped mobilize some $37 billion for Africa's progress on top of the substantial efforts that the U.S. has been making in the past. Speaking at the end of the three-day U.S.-Africa summit, Mr. Obama said he and African leaders addressed good governance, which he said is a foundation of economic growth in free societies, including respecting the rule of law and building accountable institutions.
In particular, we agreed to step up our collective efforts against the corruption that costs African economies tens of billions of dollars every year, money that ought to be invested in the people of Africa. Several leaders raised the idea of a new partnership to combat illicit finance, and there was widespread agreement. So we decided to convene our experts and develop an action plan to promote the transparency that is essential to economic growth.
President Obama also announced a new joint security governance initiative in collaboration with six African countries.
We're launching a new security governance initiative to help our African countries continue to build strong professional security forces to provide for their own security. And we're starting with Kenya, Niger, Mali, Nigeria, Ghana, and Tunisia. During our discussions, our West African partners made it clear that they want to increase their capacity to respond to crises. So the United States will launch a new effort to bolster the region's early warning and response network and increase their ability to share information about emerging crises. We also agreed to make significant new investments in African peacekeeping. The United States will provide additional equipment to African peacekeepers in Somalia and the Central African Republic. We will support the African Union's efforts to strengthen its peacekeeping institutions. And most importantly, we're launching a new African peacekeeping rapid response partnership with the goal of quickly deploying African peacekeepers in support of UN or AU missions.
Mr. Obama said it was too early to consider sending to West Africa an experimental Ebola drug that seems to have helped two Americans. But he said Ebola-affected countries should focus on building strong public infrastructure.
What we do know is that the Ebola virus, both currently and in the past, is controllable if you have a strong public health infrastructure in place. And the countries that have been affected are the first to admit that what's happened here is that their public health systems have been overwhelmed. They weren't able to identify and then isolate cases quickly enough.
President Obama described the three-day first-ever U.S.-Africa summit as an extraordinary event. He said the leaders agree that such a summit should be a critical part of future U.S.-Africa cooperation.
Given the success that we've had this week, we agreed that summits like this can be a critical part of our work together going forward, a forcing mechanism for decisions and action. So we agreed that the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit will be a recurring event to hold ourselves accountable for our commitments and to sustain our momentum. And I'll strongly encourage my successor to carry on this work because Africa must know that they will always have a strong and reliable partner in the United States of America.
With journalists jailed in Egypt and Ethiopia and Kenya passing anti-press freedom laws, Obama said he and the African leaders discussed that good governance means that everybody should have a voice. The deputy chairman of the African Union says Africa seeks technological advancement cooperation for its industries with the United States and a strong security partnership to help combat growing terrorism on the continent. Erastus Mwencha tells reporter Peter Clotty that African Union officials are negotiating with Washington to help improve some structural elements in the African Growth and Opportunity Act.
One of the things that we've been discussing in the last 2 days, yesterday we had a ministerial meeting on AGOA, is how to strengthen the trade framework, to look at some of its weaknesses, to strengthen its positive aspects so that we can see better trade, trade that has also got an element of investment. We need investment that can translate Africa's products into finished products because, in the first place, Africa is a market of 1 billion people plus, but also to export to the rest of the world so that Africa can participate. So that is as far as trade is concerned. Now, there is also the segment security. We've been working with the U.S. in some of those areas, like in Central Africa. Again, we need to work with the international community on how to combat things like terrorism and the rest.
Some member countries have been battling issues of terrorism. With this U.S.-Africa summit, how will this present a platform that would engage both the African Union and its members with the U.S. administration in terms of combating what you just described as a global phenomenon?
Well, in the first instance, we have our own program. We have a program to create an African peace and security architecture, which has several components, some of which, of course, is not only have to have standby forces, but also a rapid response mechanism. And in this, we will need skills, we will need equipment, we will need information to exchange information, because if you take the issue like, say, Boko Haram at the moment, this is, again, a phenomenon which you know that it has linked outside the locality where it operates. How do they get their equipment? How do they, you know, get their supplies, or how do they get resources? Now, we need to work with the international community on all these kind of things.
You've discussed this issue with U.S. Representatives, businesses, and all that. How enthusiastic are American businesses in terms of engaging the continent and members of the African Union to invest and have deepened relations with individual countries and as a continental body?
The first instance, the business in U.S., like businesses all over the world, would want to make money. And it's a fact that return for capital from Africa, Africa has got the highest return for capital. So the businesses in U.S. would naturally be interested to go where the returns are.
Erastus Mwencha is the deputy chairman of the African Union. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Washington, D.C. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared a state of emergency in the wake of soaring Ebola death toll that has reached 271, including 32 healthcare workers. Speaking Wednesday, the president said her government will institute extraordinary measures, including, if need be, the suspension of certain rights and privileges. Information Minister Louise Brown tells me Ebola has become a clear and present danger to the collective survival of the Liberian nation.
A state of emergency in Liberia is the highest level of emergency that our law allows. The president is responding to the grave situation we now confront. It is obviously a clear and present danger to the collective survival of our nation, and so she has elevated our national emergency to this very high level. In an address tonight, the president recounted the dreadfulness of this virus, the fact that it is attacking our way of life. It is having a death toll on not just healthcare workers, but many of our citizens. And there is also growing economic constraint that this disease has placed on us.
Mr. Minister, the president said that the government will institute extraordinary measures, including, if need be, the suspension of certain rights and privileges. What does this mean?
Well, you know that we enjoy the right to freedom of movement in our country. Because the measures will be extraordinary, it could mean that some rights, including freedom of movement, will be still, as I speak to you, operation White Shield has been launched. It is expected to gain full operational status by Friday. Operation White Shield is a sort of quarantine operation by the military to ensure that we restrict the movement of people from affected communities to unaffected communities, and the reverse is also true.
So the government has shut down markets in affected areas. How would the people in those areas eat or meet their daily needs?
Well, we've begun to shut down markets to restrict the large gathering of people because in an unprecedented way, I should say, this virus is manifesting itself in populated places, making it even more difficult to control. As people move about, it becomes increasingly difficult to control. The death toll continues to rise. So clearly we have to take some extraordinary measures, not because we like to do it, but because we must do it.
Liberia's Information Minister Louise Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 7th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Officials of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Health and Sanitation are discussing how they could eventually use the experimental drug known as ZMAPP to treat Ebola. The drug is being used to treat two Americans who contracted the virus in Liberia last month and have since been flown to the United States for treatment. Sidi Yaya Tunis, spokesperson for Sierra Leone's Ministry of Health and Sanitation, tells Ricky Shryak that officials are considering taking the next steps to accessing the drug in the country.
As far as with ZMAP, we are first of all monitoring how ZMAP will react as far as in the case of the two Americans. And then once we see that the drug has been successful, then we'll take steps going through WHO for medical advice. And then based on the advice that they will give us, then we will pursue further whether in fact to do trials of the drugs in Sierra Leone or not.
What kind of organizations does the government have to go through in order to formally request these drugs from the company?
We have not been in touch yet, but then if we have to do that, then we have to consult the World Health Organization for advice.
Has there been any kind of negative response in the country to where were these drugs a few months ago when hundreds of West Africans were dying from the disease?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, that's what everybody is saying. I mean, if these people knew they had it, why were they keeping it only for their own citizens when others were dying all over the place? They didn't say anything about it, that we have something that might save these lives. So people are a little bit disappointed for that action.
The government didn't take any steps to reach out, but they also weren't contacted as well.
Well, the government hasn't taken any steps yet, but it's something definitely that the government has been looking at critically. You know, going forward, I know the government will take steps towards that.
I know I saw some photos of Freetown the other day. It was basically a ghost town. There was nobody walking around. What's the status right now of Freetown? Are things still pretty much shut down and people staying in their homes?
Well, that one day was a special request made by the president. He declared that particular day a stay-at-home day, and everybody obeyed. That's why you saw the streets empty that day. But for now, people are going about their businesses. But I mean, since that day, the awareness has been high, and so people are pretty cautious going around. Also, government has taken further steps. The military and the police have been deployed in countries with over 70% of the disease burden. Those epicenters will be quarantined so that we can stop the spread of the disease from the epicenters.
The epicenters would be Kenema and where else?
Kailang. And also those houses wherein we have had confirmed cases, we quarantine the entire household for 21 days. During the process, government provides foods and other basic amenities, and we constantly monitor the house just to ensure that we don't get confirmed cases. And in the case wherein we get people that will exhibit signs and symptoms within those 21-day period, and then we can just take them out for test and then for further treatment.
That was Sidi Yaya Tunis, spokesperson for Sierra Leone's Ministry of Health and Sanitation. We're speaking to Ricky Shryak from Freetown. A top United Nations official says South Sudan is on the brink of a humanitarian catastrophe and a protracted internal conflict following more than 7 months of inter-ethnic fighting. Edmond Moulay told the UN Security Council on Wednesday that South Sudan is experiencing a man-made crisis and that those responsible for it have been slow in resolving it. Meanwhile, and as Lucy Pony reports from Nairobi, rebel officials are defending their decision to walk out of the current round of peace talks taking place in Addis Ababa.
In a statement released last evening, the mediators said the SPLM in opposition failed to attend the talks despite their previous commitment to an inclusive multi-stakeholder roundtable peace process and the modalities for comprehensive talks. Mabior Garang, the spokesperson for the opposition, says they want inclusivity at the talks but insists the root causes of the war must be discussed and the war stopped before any broad-based talks take place.
We are the ones who have been pushing for inclusivity from the beginning, but it has to be a correct methodology that is followed, because right now there is a conflict, there is a war. We want to have direct negotiations with the government to see how we can stop this war so that we can have a more conducive environment in which what stakeholders want to be done can be done.
Presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny says the opposition's failure to respect their commitment to resuming the talks with other stakeholders has created confusion at the talks.
The pulling out of the rebels delegation yesterday was disappointing. It was their position that has led the whole mediators into pressuring the government to accept the fact that all other stakeholders has to be included in the talk. They are now coming back to our position. This is the position that the government was in back to January. We were saying if there has to be a peaceful negotiation between the government and the rebels, it should be confined between the two warring parties. These were our position. Rebels were one of the people who were actually telling the well that it is the government which was not serious. Now the well is seeing them. They are the ones who are not serious.
Ateny says the government delegation in Addis is under instruction not to return to Juba without reaching a peace agreement with the rebels, and the current impasse will not change that position. Garang says many people are now more concerned about forming a transitional government rather than ending the conflict because of the 60-day deadline, which is fast approaching.
When the mediation introduced the 60-day clause that a government of national unity should be formed within 60 days, it confused the situation within the peace talks, because originally it was not to be that after 60 days we pack our bags in Addis Ababa and we go back to Juba. What was to be discussed was what such a government would look like in the future, so that we can begin discussing those issues of reforms and things like that.
Mabior says it is a misrepresentation by IGAD that the opposition delegation walked out of the talks, adding that their committees are working on finalizing the matrix for the cessation of hostilities agreement. For VOA, I'm Lucy Pony reporting from Nairobi.
In Uganda, the lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender LGBT community is celebrating a court ruling which annulled a law making same-sex acts punishable with up to life in prison. But as Elizabeth Pollard reports from Kampala, the fight for legal rights is not over.
August 1st was a day of celebration for LGBT activists here. That is the day when the Constitutional Court struck down the Anti-Homosexuality Act. The Act, which increased punishments for same-sex acts and the promotion of homosexuality, was passed in December and signed into law in February by President Yoweri Museveni. It had popular support among many Ugandans who believe the Act takes a stand for Christian moral values, which oppose homosexuality as a sin. Over the last 8 months, local LGBT advocacy groups moved underground, relegated to safe houses and clandestine meetings. Isaac Mugisha from Spectrum Uganda, an organization which focuses on healthcare for Uganda's LGBT community, describes the moment the legislation was approved.
When the bill was passed, first in December last year, our first action that we took as Spectrum was to take away all the documents, ban all the papers. We actually had like several papers, files banned here. That moment was really very hard.
Last week, the court did not actually rule on the content of the law, but annulled it on technical grounds. A panel of five judges unanimously agreed that when Speaker Rebecca Kadaga passed the bill, she did so without a quorum. According to the judges, Ms. Kadaga had been warned multiple times about this practice. Human Rights Watch LGBT senior researcher Neela Ghoshal says the ruling is still a victory for gay rights, even though the court did not address the ethical aspects of the law.
The court hasn't had an opportunity to rule on the real sort of substance matter of the case. But, you know, the fact is that everybody is breathing a sigh of relief in Uganda right now because the law can no longer be enforced.
Uganda faced backlash from rights groups and the international community. The United States and other nations reduced or redirected aid to the country.
That was Elizabeth Pollard reporting from Kampala. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Hosts Madagascar squeezed a narrow 73-72 victory over Mozambique on the final day of the group phase at the Africa Men's Under-18 Basketball Championships in Antananarivo on Wednesday. Ivory Coast edged Angola 73-71. Mali beat Benin 61-43 as Egypt breezed past Tunisia 74-54. All eight teams are through to the quarterfinals tomorrow, Friday. Turning to football, Nigeria's Falconets came from behind to hold Mexico to a 1-1 draw in their Group C match at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Moncton, Canada on Wednesday. Nigerian attacking midfielder Osarenoma Igbinovia scored a first-half equalizer after striker Fabiola Ibarra put Mexico ahead with an early goal. Staying in Canada, African representatives face Korean opponents in their second group matches. Ghana's Black Princesses face North Korea in Toronto tomorrow, Friday. If they win their second match, they will qualify for the quarterfinals with a game in hand. Meanwhile, Nigeria's Falconets encounter South Korea in Moncton on Saturday in a must-win tie to strengthen their chances of progressing to the quarterfinals. In Algeria, Frenchman Christian Gourcuff takes over coaching the Algerian Desert Fox. The Algerian Football Federation revealed in Algiers on Wednesday. His primary objectives are to qualify the Desert Fox for the 2015 and 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations, as well as the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Algeria also expect him to qualify the Desert Fox for the 2016 and 2018 Orange Africa Nations Championships. Meanwhile, Matt Nodge is being retained as Tanzanian Taifa Stars coach despite Tanzania's exit in the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. The Tanzania Football Federation head Jamal Malinzi told the Dar es Salaam media on Wednesday. Malinzi says Nodge needs more time to continue rebuilding Taifa Stars in readiness for the regional SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Ethiopia in November. In contrast, Ian Goroa has quit as Zimbabwe's coach after his team's exit in the Nations Cup qualifiers. Goroa claims there has been a breakdown in his working relations with the Zimbabwe Football Association Administration. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Barack Obama says it is too early to consider sending to West Africa an experimental Ebola drug that seems to have helped two Americans with the virus. At the end of the three-day U.S.-Africa summit in Washington Wednesday, Mr. Obama said, "We have got to let science guide us on sending supplies of the drug ZMAPP to the region." Well, that's it for this Thursday, August 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that your Thursday will be a very peaceful one.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.